actor Roy Billing has been based in Sydney for years. He became a star for his role as drug lord Aussie Bob Trimbole in the Australian drama Underbelly, but appeared closer to home recently in The Panthers as Robert Muldoon. His other credits are too many to mention. A recent movie that you might have seen is Never Too Late. He's back in New Zealand, living in New Zealand, about to appear in his first stage production here for years, the Auckland Theatre Company's Grand Horizons by US playwright Bess Wohl. Nancy and Bill are breaking up after 50 years of marriage, and their adult sons are having trouble dealing with it. It is, in fact, a very funny play. Jennifer Ward Leland is directing it. It's scheduled to open on February the 8th. Annie Whittle plays Nancy. Roy Billing plays Bill. He's with me now. Hi, Roy. How are you?
Good morning, Kim.
February the 8th. Fingers crossed.
Indeed. February 8th, first preview. It's going to be very interesting.
It is going to be interesting. is it COVID? Is it definite? Or do you think that it is still perhaps not able to go ahead?
No, well, the plan is to go ahead. First preview, the 8th, the opening night, official opening night on the 10th, and then we play through till March the 5th. But audiences are limited to 100,
yeah.
Socially distanced and with masks, which is going to be very odd standing on that big stage looking out into that 675-seat auditorium.
As a matter of interest, when you take part in a play like this, do you have to stay 2 metres apart?
No. The cast have been sort of rehearsing in a little bubble, and we get rapid antigen tests every day.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, so we'll just perform as normal, but the audience will be separated. So it'll be, you know, it's a play like this, which is very, very funny. You often rely on, you know, a big audience as sort of a critical mass where people feel free to let themselves go and laugh. So it'll be interesting to see how people feel like expressing their mirth with a mask on and a metre away from everybody else.
Yeah, and given that theatre performance is so reliant on energy and the energy coming from the audience, it's going to be interesting.
Oh, look, that's exactly right, especially in a comedy. You know, you rely on the laughter sort of feeds you, it sort of energises you.
I was reading the play. I haven't seen it.
Oh, good on you.
But it is tremendously funny. And also it struck me very difficult because there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of interruption. There's a lot of very tight, synchronised scripting.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting writing, because when people talk, they do overlap each other. And she's got in the script to sort of, you know, there's an indication where one speech overlaps another. And when you actually hear it and are performing it, it's very real, because that's how we talk. We don't sort of often let people finish their sentences. We jump in. So it's very clever writing, I thought.
Is it hard? Is it hard to perform?
That part of it was, but, you know, we've had nearly a month's rehearsal, so we're sort of we're pretty used to it now.
I was interested to see that in the original production of this play, James Cromwell played Bill.
And Jamie.
You're appearing with him in Never Too Late, aren't you? He's famous,
that's right,
for
yes.
6 Feet Under and Succession and a huge number of other things. You would know him quite well now.
Yeah, we, back in pre-COVID days, I went over to Adelaide and shot this movie called Never Too Late about these guys, Vietnam vets in a veterans rest home, and Jamie was there was Jamie, Dennis Waterman, myself, and Jack Thompson. So I met Jamie then, so I was very intrigued to see that he played the same role as me in the New York production.
It's quite a feminist play, actually, Roy, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's definitely. I mean, I sort of see it, it's sort of it's Nancy's play, really. It's her, you know, it's her going through that late middle age stage, and
I don't,
she's the one who decides.
I know we're trying. I know we're trying to avoid the term old age, but I don't think you can have a late middle age.
Oh well, let's say old age. So,
yeah.
Yes, late middle age. Just
putting off
old age.
Putting off the inevitable, Roy.
Yeah. So she's the one who's driving the whole divorce thing. So and she's got some hilarious lines and some very poignant stuff too. So it's and Annie's great in the role. She's such a treat to work with.
The parts are not drying up for you. What are you, 74? You're late middle age.
No, I'm 74, so I'm old age, really. I'm a pensioner. But, yes, it's sort of I just keep, I came back to New Zealand from 30 years in Australia about 3 years ago, thinking I was going to sort of have a quiet semi-retirement on Waiheke Island, but I just keep getting work, and I'd like to think part of that is because I'm good at what I do, but also in our business there is an attrition rate. I don't think there's a lot of actors around my age to choose from.
But also the demographic guarantees an audience for movies and theatre featuring mature characters.
Yes, and it's interesting that a lot of feature films like, you know, Marigold Hotel and all that are sort of aimed at an older audience. This play is pretty universal, really. It's not particularly aimed at an older audience, but a lot of cinema is these days. I guess because older people attend the cinema a lot more.
And do you regard yourself as a New Zealander, or are you an Australian now?
Oh, definitely New Zealander. Definitely New Zealander.
Nevertheless.
I've got dual citizenship.
Have you? I mean, the Australians obviously think that you're theirs. They gave you the Medal of the Order of Australia for services to the performing arts and to the community.
That's right, they do. But no, I'm a Kiwi, born and bred, and loving living back here.
What took you to Australia in the first place?
I went over in 1989. And in those days in New Zealand, I just couldn't see where I was going to go. I mean, there's a lot more film and television and happening here now, but I just couldn't see where I was going to go if I was going to have a career and make a living out of it.
Where were you in New Zealand in 1989? What was the status of your career?
I was doing pretty well. I, you know, doing things like Gliding On and all sorts of things.
That's
but then
right.
I read a review once of something I was in, and the guy mentioned same old faces, and I thought, oh, hello. I mean, it's sort of if you're successful overseas, everybody says, wow, great success. Here it was sort of like tired old faces, and we've seen enough. And I just thought there was more opportunity in Australia. But when I went there, I had to start off from scratch because I really didn't know what I'd done here. So I was doing auditions and getting roles, but it didn't take too long to start forging out quite a successful career over there.
I reckon. What was the breakthrough for you, do you think?
I think it was probably the Dish film I did about the Parkes Observatory radio telescopes participation in the 1969 moon landing, which I did with Sam Neill. And that was a huge success for Working Dog, who did The Castle and other things.
It's iconic, that movie now, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I was working pretty regularly, but that was sort of like a breakthrough. And then the big breakthrough was probably Underbelly, that series that I was in playing Bob Trimboli on there'd already been one series, and on the opening night, on a Monday night, they screened a double episode, and the ratings were just huge. It was about 25% of the country was watching, so it was huge. And that's really what set me up in Australia. I mean, every time I walk down the street there, somebody yells out, "Oh, g'day, Bob," or somebody knew him. So one of those roles you can't shake off.
In fact, there's a phrase in Australia, and it seems a peculiarly Australian phrase, a colourful racing identity.
Yes.
And I don't,
Yes.
why is that such an Australian phrase?
I don't know. I guess like
It's a
Trimbolic was
euphemism for
a.
a criminal, right?
Yes, a dodgy person who frequents the racetracks, and like Trimboli used to pay jockeys off and used to fix horse races, dodgy bookies. But the inference is that the colourfulness is the dishonest. There's some dishonesty. There's some criminal activity somewhere.
And didn't you get an honorary pass to the racetrack on the basis of playing Bob Trumbully?
Yes. The Auckland Turf Club, got invited to a lunch in the chairman's suite, and the new CEO said, "How would you like to be an ambassador for the racing club?" And I said, "What, for playing a dodgy, murdering drug dealer who used to fix horse races?" And he said, "Yeah." Aussies love their criminals.
Took you a long time to get into the acting scene, did it not, in the first place?
It did, yeah. I started off, gosh, working for the Inland Revenue Department, and then I got into advertising, and I started
Well,
doing amateur
lest we
dramatics.
forget, you were in a band called the Ministry of Fog.
Oh yes, gosh, that was way back in my university days, when in the 60s, sort of like a mediocre garage band, but we could play Jimi Hendrix, so that was pretty innovative at the time. We had a guitarist who could actually imitate Hendrix, so that was pretty good. But so yes, so and then I got involved in amateur dramatics, and I suppose what they call getting the bug. I just loved it, and then finally Raymond Hawthorne offered me a job with Theatre Corporate and Theatre and Education. So I sort of thought, this is it. I either do it now or I don't. So I dropped considerably in salary and joined Theatre Corporate,
Well, I bet you
going
did
around the
because you were
school.
working in advertising in the 60s, which would have been quite lucrative, I imagine.
It was very much like that program, that
Mad Men.
American TV series Mad Men. So I thought that's exactly what it was
Was
like.
it?
Yeah, very
So,
much.
was it not a hard decision to give up the money for the boards?
No, it wasn't. It was one of those things I thought, look, if ever I'm going to get an opportunity to be a professional actor, this is it. And especially in this country, there was no other avenues really. So I just thought, oh, here I go. And I mean, obviously, it was a very good choice.
You've talked about an autobiography being in the works called Why Can't You Get a Proper Job, which is what your father said to
Yeah, my
you.
father never really accepted me being an artiste.
Did he
Um,
not?
he was a he was a panel beater. I heard later after he died that he was used to skite about me a bit, but never to my face. And
No, that's such a common story, isn't it?
it is, and with people who follow an arts sort of bent. But yeah, I remember he once sent, and this was when I was reasonably successful in New Zealand, and I had a nice house and a nice car and everything. And he just said, "Oh, look, why can't you get a proper job?" So I just thought, where's that coming from, you know?
Did that
Anyway.
make you angry or sad?
Oh, just sort of bewildered, really. I just thought, well, this is what I do. You know, if you don't like it, well, don't comment on it. But he did watch some of the television stuff I did, but never said anything to my face, but told other people he was quite proud of me doing it.
They do say that the only thing a son ever wants to hear from his father is, "I am proud of you." Did you yearn
Yes.
for that?
No, I heard it
Ah, no.
secondhand. Secondhand. Secondhand.
What do you mean?
Well, from other people, you
But
know.
did you want your father to say that to you? Was that
Yeah,
something?
it would have been very nice.
Yep.
Yes, it would have been very nice.
What about your mum?
Oh, mum died when she was only early 50s.
How
She
old were
had
you?
I'm just trying to think. I would have been 16, 17. No, early 20s, early 20s.
No.
So she never sort of saw me go into an acting career.
You were brought up in Rūwai, and I see
In
that,
Rūwai in Northland?
and Rāwari Paratene was from there too, but did you know him?
Well, it's strange because I was talking to Rāwari once, years and years and years ago, and he mentioned that he came from Rūwai. And I said, "Whereabouts did you live in Rūwai?" And he finished up being two doors down from us because his name is the Rāwari Paratene's his Maori name. His Pākehā name was Raymond Broughton, and there were the two little Broughton boys who used to live a couple of doors from me in Rūwai. It was
Ah.
just for both of us going, "My God, that's weird."
So you knew
So
him, but you didn't know you knew him.
no, I
Ah.
didn't know. I didn't know he was little Raymond Broughton because I was a bit older than him. So yes, so two boys from Rūwai who used to live almost next door to each other became actors.
Did you have a good childhood?
I did. I did. I mean, Dad was a bit sort of bit of a disciplinarian and bad tempered, and but I managed to sort of get around that. I had a good, lots of good mates.
How did you
Had
get
quite a good
around
home.
it?
Oh, just immersing myself and, reading books and doing painting and keeping just, keeping away from him when I knew he was in a bad mood.
Was he unusually bad-tempered, or was it just the
Well,
times that he was a disciplinarian?
I thought he was quite bad-tempered, really. But
Why do you think he was
yeah,
bad-tempered? I mean, why was he bad-tempered?
that's a mystery to me. I mean, he had a successful business, but he just—I don't know—he just never seemed to be, never seemed to be happy.
Did
But
he
who
drink?
knows why? He did. He drank a lot, so that
It's
could have
hard to
been
know
part of
whether
it.
that's a cause or result of unhappiness.
Exactly. But I mean, it wasn't dreadful, but it was sort of, especially when I was younger, I used to try and avoid him if I knew he was in one of his bad moods.
How old were you when
But
you left home?
when I left home, I was about 17 or 18.
All right. And where did you go immediately?
My parents were living in Papatoetoe. I went and lived in Grafton with some mates in a flat. So moved into the city, into the big smoke.
You became very famous in Australia, as I said. And as you said, people would say, "Hey, Bob," when you walked down the street. Did you like that?
I quite did actually. It was there's some very strange sort of I met, people who had actually met him and knew him. But some of them were a bit strange. One guy came up to me.
A bit strange.
One of them came up. One of them came up to me and said, "Oh, Bob used to live next door to me in Maroubra until he died." And I said, "Well, I didn't know he lived in Maroubra, but he died in Spain. I didn't know he lived in Maroubra." And the guy said, "Oh, no, that was after that. So God knows what that meant." And there's an old bookie at Randwick. Every time I'd walk past him, he'd yell out, "Hey, you owe me $1,500." That's odd. And I've met people who were actually sort of, from Griffith, where Bob came from, of Italian heritage, who regard him as a hero. And you don't really want to know much, too much about their background, because I think the Calabrian mafia is still alive and well in Australia.
It's a really interesting society, Australia, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's all that sort of, as I was saying before, they almost hero worship some of their criminals. And
I
I
mean, the
mean,
Ned
I.
Kelly syndrome, you could call it, right?
And I think Trimboli, because he got away from the cops, and they never put him in jail. He became quite a hero, especially amongst the Italian community.
Another of
So
your
anyway.
projects that you became best known for was the role of Harry Strang
Jack
in,
Irish.
yeah. in the late Peter Another. Temple's. I love Peter Temple. Isn't he a great writer?
I was great. I used to sort of have an email correspondence with him. Very interesting man.
He was a lovely man. I talked to him once.
Yeah. He had one more Jack Irish novel, which he never finished, which is a great pity. But no, Harry Strang, there you go. Another colourful racing identity.
Yeah. Peter Temple sort of. Wrote the best description of the behaviour of standard poodles that I've ever met.
Oh, really? I haven't read that.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing because he had them. And I don't know.
That's
it's
right.
just this gorgeous, gorgeous description. I can't remember which book it was in, actually. Not one of the Jack Irish ones, I think.
Yeah. No, he was devoted to his dogs.
I mentioned your autobiography.
Mm. That's still a work in progress.
Is it?
Sort of, yeah, I get writer's block and put it aside. I've got quite a lot there. And then you think, when do you finish the damn thing? where's the cutoff point? But I'm hoping that when we finish this rehearsal period and I've got days free, I'm hoping to pick it back up again and get onto it. But it's one of those things, you go to the computer and see it there and, oh, dear, and walk away.
How much have you
written? Writer's block or laziness.
How much have you written?
I've got about 60,000-70,000 words.
Oh,
that's
bad.
Quite a lot.
Not bad.
No, not bad. Not bad. Not bad.
And
there.
You're right. At what point do you finish it?
Yeah. You just keep writing until you die, and then they publish what you've written.
Posthumously.
Yes.
Let's not have that, because then I won't be able to talk to you about it if it's a posthumous publication. Eh? You see yourself as semi-retired, but I suspect you're not. You've still got a lot of
work. Oh, no, look, I'm not. I'm. You know, that's just a euphemism for sort of saying I live on Waiheke Island and go fishing and gardening and things. But really, I'm still getting lots of work, and I still do a lot of advertising voiceover work for Australian clients. So I'm sort of working pretty regularly, really. But you know, the good thing about what I do is that there are gaps, you know, weeks where you might not have anything. So that's very nice.
This is a text I've received. I'm going to run it past you, even though it may go nowhere. It's from Jan Salter. That was from Ruawai. My brother, my brother Tom and I were in.
Yes.
You remember F1 and F2. They say, were you in hospital around the time? I remember our teacher, Mr. Rimmer, came back from visiting you in Dargaville Hospital. He brought
That's
back
right. when, yeah,
a concertina-style illustrated work you'd done on the Young Lochinvar poem. Does that ring a bell?
No, not the Lochinvar poem, but I was in hospital when I was 11. I had sort of benign pericarditis, sort of like rheumatic fever. I was in hospital for a couple of months.
Blimey. Has that had any repercussions on your life since?
No. Complete recovery.
Well, there you go. Jan Salter sends her regards.
Very good. Thank you, Jan.
Lovely to talk to you, Roy. Best
yes,
of luck.
Yes, and look, I hope people come along to Grand Horizons.
Yes.
Don't be put off by the 100 per performance, because it's about quality, not quantity, this play.
Indeed.
I think with audiences.
it's very, very funny. On paper, at least, I'm sure you'll do it justice. Roy Billing, who takes the stage, as he said, in Grand Horizons on February 8th, Auckland Theatre Company.